Welcome to the May 31st, 2013 Jupilize Me podcast. Hey there, folks. This is Addison Berry, your hostess for today's podcast. And I have with me a gaggle of bots. So with me today is
Jared Ponchot,
along with
James Sansbury
and
Carwin Young,
and last but not least,
Chris Bowman.
Woo! We have two new podcasters, although Carwin has actually recorded a podcast before that I forgot to record. Yeah. So this time everything is recorded. We double checked it. Carwin's actually going to be on a podcast this time that gets published. And Chris has never been on a podcast at all. So
that's like going for an hour-long drive and realizing you never left your driveway. I just sat in the car for an hour. That's horrible.
But I had the radio on and the engine running.
Just forgot to drive.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Carwin. All right. Now's your shining moment, man. So I have these fine bots with me here today because what we're going to do is talk about the new lullabot.com. So we relaunched lullabot.com. Gosh, it was like over a month ago now?
Ish,
around that.
Yeah, beginning of April around.
Right. And so we have, you know, a whole new look and a whole new thing, and we upgraded and everything like that. And we posted a blog post about it, and a lot of people had questions and wanted to know more information sort of about, like, how did we do it? Like, what was going on in the back end of it all? So we thought we'd do a podcast and actually share that information with the people who actually worked on it. So before we get into all of that goodness, news updates, the most important piece of news that I want to get out there for people is that this week there was a big security announcement for Drupal.org, and you need to reset your Drupal.org password. We'll have a link to sort of the explanation of what's going on in the podcast notes. But basically, passwords for Drupal.org have been compromised. So for your Drupal.org account, you should go in. All the passwords have been reset. So if you try and log in, you're going to need to reset your password. So go do that now. I'll give you a couple minutes. Okay, no, I won't really, because that'd just be awkward silence while we waited. But go take care of it.
I should note that if you go to the login form on Drupal.org, it appearance-wise, it doesn't appear as though anything's wrong because they just embedded the link and the information into some tiny paragraph text that's above the login form that doesn't look like it's any kind of a special message. So note that if you're going there and it's not letting you log in, this is why, and look for that little link.
Okay.
This also affects groups.drupal.org, too.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it's all this. It's a single sign-on system. So when you change your account, your password on Drupal.org, you're going to update it for groups.drupal.org, association.drupal.org. All of those websites are using single sign-on. So, but go do it now. It's important. Okay. So with that out of the way and focused on other news stuff going on, we started our Learning SaaS and Compass series during DrupalCon. So this is cool because it's really just focused on SaaS and Compass that people have been talking about a lot. And it's like, what is that stuff? I know when people first started talking about it, I was like, what's the difference between SaaS and Compass? I don't even get it. So we have an entire series. We launched it last week during DrupalCon, and it's going to be rolling out for the next couple of weeks. So go check that out. And speaking of DrupalCon was pretty awesome. It was huge, as always in North America now. If you could not make it to DrupalCon, you can watch all of the videos on YouTube. The Drupal Association has its own channel on YouTube, and you can go there and you can find videos from at least the past several conferences. I don't know if they got all of them on there or not, but they have quite a lot of them. But they definitely have all the ones from Portland. So you can go and just watch them for free and see all the stuff that everybody got exposed to at DrupalCon. And I also wanted to mention that, the last day of the Friday of a DrupalCon is always the sprint day. And this year we had like 600 plus people at the sprint. That's larger than a lot of DrupalCons in the past. So it's larger than many camps. That's kind of nuts. So everybody was just hacking on and working and contributing stuff all day long, which is pretty awesome. We did a community tools workshop, and we had 160 people. So that's 160 new people wanting to get involved and got up to speed and started being able to contribute that day. So those are just, I don't know, they're astounding numbers to me. So I think that's super exciting in terms of the growth of our community. And I'm really excited to see what happens in Prague, because we're going to do the same thing there. And then in terms of big news also that happened at the sprint day, a whole bunch of people really bore down, and we actually do really have Twig into core now. So last year, the Twig engine was put into core, but there's a lot of work to actually make it really work and be the main engine for Drupal. And we were coming down to the wire with Code Freeze coming up in a month. And basically, we had some deadlines that Dries set up that it's like, you know, this work needs to get done or we're going to have to pull Twig back out again. So it was kind of teetering on the edge there. And people really just got it done. So Twig is actually going to ship with Drupal 8 now because people got all the work done that needed to happen. So that was a pretty big, because that was like a nerve-wracking thing of, oh my gosh, it's been in there, but we aren't getting it done. And people came together and they got it done. So that's pretty exciting information too. And then next DrupalCons, they announced at Portland that the next U.S. DrupalCon is going to be in Austin the first week of June.
Texas.
Yeah, Austin, Texas. The first week of June, Austin, Texas. It sounds hot. So, but it should be fun. Austin's a really cool town. So just bring a lot of, you know, sunblock and tank tops and stuff, I think.
Incidentally, it's going to be on a houseboat.
Oh, dear. and then, so that was the big announcement at DrupalCon Portland. Also keep in mind that DrupalCon Prague is happening the end of September, September 23rd to 27th. So that'll be the next con that we have going on. So if you want to go hang Prague, I've never been to Prague and I'm very excited to go because I keep hearing amazing things about it as a city. So I'm stoked. I'm going to be going. The entire Drupalize Me team is going to be there. And I know that there are a couple other bots who are looking at going too. So you should get on, get Prague on your calendar there.
Can we get tickets for that yet?
No, I think that the site is going to launch like in the next week or so. Like, I mean, there's a site there. We'll put a link to it in the notes, but yeah, there's no actual like registration and stuff like that set up yet, but it should be happening very, very shortly now. So I will find out very soon because I'm on the, I'm actually on the DrupalCon Prague team. So, and we have a call later on. So
email all your questions to Addy.
Wait, that's not what I meant. And then, yeah, so speaking of events, the last stuff I just wanted to kind of, you know, talk about real quick is what events you can find bots at in June, because we're going to be kind of all over the map. And so starting off next week in Minneapolis is ConFab, which is Content Strategy Conference. And we have Jeff Eaton is speaking there. And I know Jeff Robbins and Jared, you're going.
Yeah, and I believe Joe Schindler is going to be there.
Right.
And Andrew Wilson, I think, might stop by as well.
Right. Cool. Yeah, because Joe and Andrew are in Minneapolis, so that makes sense. So that should be a lot of fun. I wish I hadn't just been in the U.S. and going back to the U.S. in a few weeks, because I would have loved to have gone to that conference. We're also going to be at Drupal Camp Austin, which is June 21st, 23rd. I know at least Ben and Andrew Wilson are going to be down there for that one, and maybe some other bots as well. And then Drupal Dev Days in Dublin is happening the last weekend in June, June 28th through 30th. And it's also, there's going to be sprints going on the entire week before, because at the end of Drupal Dev Days is Code Freeze for Drupal 8. So there's going to be a lot of last minute, like furious typing going on. Myself, Sally and Wampy are going to be there the entire week. So we're going to be sprinting as well as doing the camp and that kind of a thing. So, you know, if you're there, find us, say hi. And then last but not least is Drupal Camp Colorado is happening that same weekend, June 29th, 30th. And, we have several bots out in Colorado who I believe will be showing up. And then I think also Jeff Eaton is also planning to go out to that one. So yeah, come find us. And if you want to find other events that might be going on in your area, go check out Drupal. That's a website that nicely pulls together a lot of Drupal events all over the world, not just camps and conferences.
And not just in California, which is what it sounds like.
I know, Drupal. Well, you see, I always want to say Drupal, because it's a hard word to pronounce, and iCal, I think, is sort of the concept there.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I'm making it
Drupal.
I know. Right, Drupal. Some people think Drupal like tropical because it has a palm tree and stuff, and it's like tropical, but it's like, but yeah. Anyway, there you go. Go check that out. Find events that are happening near you, yeah, get together with your Drupal peeps. Cool. All right, news done. We're out of there. Let's talk about lullabot.com. So we launched the new site. We have definitely really changed not just the design, but like sort of just major elements in terms of the information we have on the site and how we're presenting it to people and that kind of a thing. And it was a long process, shall we say. And so aside from actually just like wanting to upgrade, so we were running on Drupal 6 and we wanted to upgrade, you know, keep moving up with the times here. Drupal 8 is coming out soon. But what were we trying to accomplish with the complete redesign and sort of the complete like starting from scratch almost? What was going on with that conceptually?
I can speak to that a little bit, since I think I'm one of the only people on this that actually was a part of some of the very early conversations. Believe it or not, we started this process. I actually think that the conversations around it began in 2011, late 2011. And by January of 2012, we were beginning to sort of write things down and actually start the project. And so there were a number of things, but I think a great way to understand why we made a brand new lullabot.com is to look at the site that was made prior to that. The site that was made prior to that was essentially designed, at least information architected and concepted out by Karen McGrain of Bond Art Science, who at the time had been doing some projects and had done some projects with Lullabot. She's worked with us and with our clients and was helping Lullabot sort of rethink their website. And Lullabot at the time was predominantly a consulting and training company. And Addy, I believe you're the only one on this call who was actually a Lullabot at that time. Is that right?
Yeah. So yeah, for this podcast, yeah, I'm the only one who's from that old crew doing it old style.
Old school.
Yeah.
It was quite a while ago that site was concepted. And Lullabot at the time was a consulting training company. We were one of the only companies, I think, in the Drupal space that was really heavily focused on training and sort of onboarding people into Drupal, and also we were doing a lot of mentorship consulting alongside large projects where we came alongside teams of people who were already building large sites, and our consultants came in and helped them think out how they were doing it and make sure that it was being done correctly and sort of creating best practices at the same time as we were teaching them and all that. And so that site lived for a while. By the time we were redesigning it, by late 2011, we had already been, let's see, how far into, it would have been April of, was it 2010 or 2011 that we started officially started what we referred to as the site building arm of Lullabot, where instead of just consulting, we were having designers and developers actually concept and build sites as well as doing consulting and training. And that was a radical shift for the company that really grew a lot fairly quickly and to where there was a large part of Lullabot that was, you know, invested in designing, concepting, building out large scale Drupal sites. And our website still, you know, basically was a website set up to tell people about a training company that did consulting. And so that was sort of the major issue that we wanted to correct, is sort of figuring out how do we rethink the architecture of our site and make sure that we're telling the story of who Lullabot is and what we do in a holistic way, and not telling the story of what Lullabot was a few years ago. So I don't know how much farther you want me to go into this, but we did a bunch of sort of brainstorming and talking, and there were lots of ideas floating around there for a couple months. And primarily it was sort of all the key stakeholders, the people at Lullabot who had the most, drive to make sure that we created something new. And this was Jeff Robbins and Matt Westgate, and primarily, like, I think that they were some of the main vision people behind the decisions. But it was sort of talking about just sort of the broad, like, what is it that we want to accomplish with this beyond just, telling people who Lullabot really is. And that's where it began. It's interesting to me. It's been long ago enough now that when we talked about doing this podcast, I thought, man, I don't even remember everything we were trying to do. And through the course of the process, the fact that we actually documented it actually was pretty helpful. But even just making sure all the new people coming into the project even were aware of those documents became challenging. And we can talk about that too. I mean, one of the reasons that was because I think we changed the tools we were using to manage the project like three or four times over the course of the entire project. So whether or not like links to all the different documents and stuff actually made their way into the new thing each time was, it was challenging to say the least.
Not to mention the fact that, it wasn't just about communicating who we are, even though that was like the most important thing, but, being able to communicate who we are on more than just a desktop browser was important as well. Because if you ever had tried to navigate onto our website to look at something on your mobile phone, I apologize. It was very painful. There was a lot of pinch and zooming, that sort of thing. But
yeah, there was lots of swimming you had to do. Lots of finger swimming. But yeah, so that was actually a big thing. It was when we first began the conversations in 2011, responsive web design wasn't something that was that pervasive necessarily, but we knew that it was the direction that we wanted to go with our site, and we were fascinated with it. We had actually already done a couple projects where we had done some responsive web design, and so we thought we knew what we were doing enough to do our site. And one of the interesting things to me looking back at this is this project spanned a year and a half at least. And I should say that that's not because of how enormous and impressive our site is. It has more to do with the fact that it was something that we were doing in the margins, and that actually, I mean, I wasn't actually the only, initially there was another designer working for Lullabot at the time that was doing a lot of work early on the site that while I was working on other things. So we had transitions of designers. We had tremendous transition of both back-end and front-end developers, transition of project management, or lengthy periods of time basically without project management. I mean, it was sort of like the ideal way to describe how you shouldn't try to do large-scale web projects. And
yeah, we kind of didn't follow any of our own rules that we apply to customers or clients, right?
It's actually quite embarrassing.
Yes.
Well, so, but speaking of like, because that was like, I mean, that was a huge problem. I mean, in terms of us getting this done, I mean, there's, so like, that's obviously like one of our problems, like in terms of, we had a lot of problem with just sort of process and project management from a high level, as well as like getting into the weeds kind of stuff. Does anybody have what did that cause? What problems did that cause for us, other than it took us a year and a half? Obviously it extended it way long, but like, what other problems did that actually cause in terms of trying to actually implement and just launch the damn thing?
Well, there were a number of things that there are also sort of benefits I see from it, because what essentially happened, like, I feel like we learned a great deal of, like, the problems that arose were largely problems of sort of knowledge transfer, people being able to actually understand core purpose and still make decisions around that, and then people being able to, bring design implementation across a large, you know, a large team. And so battling those problems over time actually sort of led to the evolution of what's now our more like our current design build process that we're using on client projects. And so it was sort of like having these like ridiculous constraints, like showed us all the things that can't possibly work if you need to do something quickly and keep everybody focused on core purpose and stuff. And so all the things that we did wrong have now led us to like come up with better ways, I think, which I feel like now at this point in the podcast, people are like, well, tell us what those ways are, for Pete's sake. Like some of the big things I remember were, so early on in the process, we basically reached a point where we're a client services company, so we do client projects, and we reached a point where we had this wonderful problem of being ridiculously busy, and pretty much all of our development team was booked, like 100% booked. And we were already partway into the project, and there was a lot of drive to get something done. And so I was about halftime booked at the time. And so I, as a designer, tried to basically like shortcut the whole process and not create like normal design deliverables at all. And I was going to be sort of like the designer slash Drupal themer or front end developer at the same time. And while that works great, let me first say what that meant. Actually, so what I was doing was like I didn't produce like very many actual sort of design elements like you would normally need to have like a front end team working on implementing. I just actually started doing actual theming work in Drupal for a lot of it.
So you were just like theming, and then like when you needed a design element, you would just make it and put it in there.
Yes. And what happened was it became very quickly apparent there was a tremendous amount of, I guess, what we normally refer to as site building that still had to happen. And there weren't developers available. So I was doing that as well. And it just sort of scrambling, trying to get as much done as I could. Well, what happened was over time, actually, I wound up being overbooked on client work as well. And by the time developers came back in, there was nothing but a, you know, partially done theme that was done by a designer and not like a, you know, I would not sell myself as a top level front end developer. And so it was basically like, oh no, now we need to scramble to produce some, you know, design deliverables that the front end developers who are coming onto the project can begin using. There wasn't time to do what we were starting to realize needed to happen, which was that our design deliverables needed to be something more like HTML and CSS. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for me to produce a Drupal theme. However, I can pretty quickly make a mock in HTML and CSS. And if we have those for responsive design, even if they're not the most perfect, you know, production ready thing, they actually provide a lot more information for a front end developer who's working on a responsive site. And we didn't have any of these things, you know, we were sort of scrambling at that point. And so we learned like how bad it is to have like a handful of PSDs and a lot of missing parts and have no actual sort of data around what the responsive site did. We had a whole bunch of wireframes that were like a mobile wireframe and a desktop wireframe that were static. Which we also no longer do static wireframes now. So there's a number of things like this that were just sort of like, wow, yeah, that makes it really hard to transition work between people and work as a team. And for poor Chris and Carwin and all the other front-end developers who have come in and tried to work on it, like it was sort of like, you know, untangling a nest at the same time as figuring out how to rebuild it without a blueprint.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I still have nightmares about that.
So we had static PSDs and that was just confusing to everybody. But then you said that, you know, we learned like that having like some kind of a prototype in HTML CSS makes everything better. But did you get to doing that, or was that something that just sort of like kind of halfway happened, or like how did we actually end up getting the site the closest done.
I guess the closest thing we had to that was a Drupal theme that actually already had some of the broad sort of like container responsive stuff was already in place and working. It was, you know, there was just a lot of elements and a lot of particular regions and components of that made up screens that there weren't design, you know, designs to show how these things should look, let alone respond as the screen size changes. But the broad containers were in place, and that's sort of as far as that got. And yeah, I was actually on two different client projects at the same time by the time the front end development team came in and started working in earnest on it. And so at that point it was sort of like plugging holes kind of a thing, more than like, oh, let's start fresh and actually make a bunch of HTML and CSS prototypes. There wasn't really time for that.
Shared gists back and forth of like how we wanted to do markups for specific components and that kind of thing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So that was sort of our stopgap. It was a way to like sort of work together, like sharing gists. Basically, if you don't know what gists are, it's just like sharing little bits of markup that we had written up. Like here's an example of how I'm envisioning this, the actual source order of this thing being and what it should be like. And Carwin and I did a fair bit of that, working back and forth to see if we were like on the same page about what the actual markup was and that kind of stuff. And
lots of checking the spec.
Yeah, but I mean, Carwin and Chris can also talk a lot more to the, like when I first began developing the theme. Like I wasn't even really aware of SAS like by early 2012. Like I know it was in existence, but I was a designer. You know, I knew CSS really well, and I had SAS, which like was very accessible to me. SAS and Compass, I guess, seemed way less accessible. And so what I had first started developing was sort of like built using less instead of CSS, but structured very much like old fashioned, just simple CSS sites would be. And then Carwin and Chris came in and wound up like moving everything to SAS and creating a more like a partial structure. But I feel like that's still very much in process because the launch site still is not quite as partialed as we would want it to be, or structured like our ideal is, I don't think.
Well, part of that is that it's hard to take, you know, kind of this old method of building things and try to, I don't know, at the same time launching a site, also kind of make it as modular as possible while we try to fix tickets and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and with a lot of hands in the code at the same time, moving things into the right places and moving to a modular approach with a lot of partials in the right places is difficult as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, we weren't treating ourselves well, you know, we've kind of come to that point, I think, in Lullabot as we've grown, that we need to start treating our internal projects with the same respect that we treat our client projects, you know. And we had kind of decided to take some shortcuts, and we're paying the penalty for that. And, you know, we started to do that with Drupalize Me. You know, it's like Drupalize Me we treat it like it's our own client. You know, we're going to give it resources and dedicated resources, and we just weren't doing that with Lullabot.com. We weren't giving it the respect that it needed, and therefore we were suffering the consequences of that.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about like, well, the process in terms of lots of different people, and like in terms of just architecting the build process, just sort of being, well, cockamamie, you know, like and sort of trying to like fix things and change how we were doing things as we were moving forward. But what about like other, I mean, that's like at the theme and just sort of like what our ultimate goal was and the responsive and what it's supposed to look like. But like, were there challenges or things that were going on, like in terms of just the basic site building? Or like, I mean, we migrated from 6 to 7, like how did we do that part? Cause that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, I think that's James.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think this is a common question that we even encounter with our clients is, you know, okay, we need to start thinking about Drupal 7, or we need to start thinking about Drupal 8. Does that mean upgrade, or does that mean migrate? Is there, you know, what are our options, and what are the pros and cons of those? And I think, you know, I wasn't I wasn't a part of the conversations early on, but I think we made the right choice in using Migrate module. We had basically a little history of the site. We had, you know, been upgrading the site for years and had just tons of cruft and kind of layers of paint, of, you know, kind of leaving the underlying structure the same, but let's throw a fresh coat of paint on it and call it good.
Yeah,
sort
I think
of a
we,
thing.
I think we've been upgrading the site since like Drupal 4.6 or something.
Right. So you know, 4.6, 4.7, 5, up to Drupal 6, you know, and then at this point it's like, okay, let's think about, and you know, kind of going along with what Jared was talking about at the beginning, we needed to rethink about how we were even communicating who we are, which underneath the hood meant we needed to kind of rethink the information architecture of the site. And so we really took a fresh look at the website and we're like, okay, what's going to serve us best? Let's build that out in Drupal 7 and then migrate the content from the Drupal 6 site into that Drupal 7 site. And I really think, you know, if anyone listening is trying to kind of like weigh the pros and cons, yeah, I mean, there are definitely some challenges to doing a Drupal 6 to Drupal 7 upgrade. For instance, features module, if you're using features module in your Drupal 6 site, there's kind of, you get into this chicken and egg problem where, you know, the Drupal upgrade process is telling you, okay, disable all of your contributed and custom code before you upgrade the site. But if you disable all of your features, you've just lost all of your content types. And so you kind of run into this problem of trying to, how do I upgrade the site with features? And, you know, there's other kind of challenges with that, but not insurmountable challenges. But for this particular instance, there were just so many pros to just re-architecting the site and giving ourselves a fresh foundation to start from. And we used the Migrate module for that. And at the time, there is a Migrate Drupal to Drupal module that's drupal.org/project/migrate_D2D. And that'll actually streamline the process of migrating from, say, a Drupal 6 to a Drupal 7 site. We didn't have that at the time, so we just have a bunch of custom migrate classes to do that work, which has worked fine for us. But definitely some challenges technically as far as just the migration side of things is concerned.
What other stuff did we encounter? Migrating content, and we had the... obviously like the theming and getting everything to work right. But do we have any other like just things that were like, wow, this really shouldn't take this long or be this hard, but that caused pain points for us?
Yeah, I think so kind of going back to having years of this site kind of floating around, we had had years of redirects. So, you know, this node... this, you know, as we kind of had re-architected the sites in the past, in the information architecture change, we'd say, okay, we're going to change to this alias pattern for these types of nodes. And, you know, when we did that, we'd have to create redirects for all the old, you know, the old aliases to the new aliases and stuff, because a lot of our articles are linked to from all over the place. So we have, you know, not to mention, of course, just a tremendous amount from Drupal.org. So we don't want people to, you know, get that 404. Sorry, do you want to search? You want to search for what you were looking for? You know, we wanted to really get people to the content that was being linked to from. But
it's still a really nice 404 page, though.
It is. It is a beautiful 404 page. but we also didn't want to do. I don't know if you have ever been on one of those websites where you click a link and then, you know, you see the URL bar, like, it just looks like it's an animation happening where it's changing from URL to URL, where you go through like 10 different redirects. So we kind of wanted to get rid of a bunch of those redirect, the cruft that we had of all those redirects. So we thought, oh, this will be simple. We'll just, you know, write a script to go through, look at the old node IDs and kind of create a canonical list of any alias that points to that node ID, then redirect to this new node ID on the Drupal 7 site, instead of like redirecting to this and then to this and then to this.
Easy peasy.
yeah, that was fun. I think at right before we launched, we were just like, screw it, we're not doing it. we're just going to leave all the redirects, like, and people will just jump from, you know, 10 redirects to get to the content that they want to read. But we finally did get it in a way that we weren't going to totally
I wanted to just call it a feature, you know, animated URLs. It's really cool. It's like a flipbook, you know, in the URL bar.
Yeah,
that would be cool if you used little characters. Totally should do that. Have like a snowman that marches across the URL, the address bar or something. That'd be awesome.
That will be happening. I'm pretty sure an hour after this podcast is out, Jeff Eaton will have the module on Drupal.org that will do that.
Oh, awesome. So we could probably go on and on and on talking about problems and issues, but to kind of like come back around, what have we learned? Like, what would we do differently next time? Because, you know, we're going to have to upgrade the site again at some point, and we did learn quite a lot through this painful experience. So what are those, like, what are the big, like, top learning points?
I think just like in life, oftentimes you find out that you should have just saved your money for a little while and then bought something. there's you know, interest compounds daily, and you, like, the longer you stretch out one of these things, trying to basically do it on loan to yourself with the margins of, like, disparate resources, has an intense cost. I mean, it is actually kind of staggering the amount of man hours that we put in to this project, and still wound up really paring the site down in the end. In fact, even doing a redesign of the redesign, try to simplify, to find something that would actually be just, like, quicker and simpler to build with Drupal. My biggest takeaway is just, like, when you're doing, you know, the shoemaker's son's shoes, like, when you're doing your own project, you know, treat it as an investment, you know, save up to be able to do it, and then source it like a real project, and work within that budget, and, you know, do something, you know, that you can do within that budget. I feel like that's sort of my big takeaway. And then the secondary, like I said, there are all kinds of things that I feel like have radically changed about at least my design process, that this and other projects helped me learn. But yeah, I don't know about others.
I think the nature of responsive right now made this a particularly challenging project, because kind of under our feet, the landscape was changing as we were kind of, you know, as the process was slowing things down, you know, underneath our feet, the responsive landscape was changing. And we were realizing that techniques that maybe 2 years ago or a year and a half ago were like the quote unquote right way of doing things, like, very quickly became like, oh my gosh, that is the worst way possible that you could do this, you know. And we ran into those problems of, I'm sure Chris kind of came in as we were, you know, as we were realizing, okay, we need to, what Jared was saying, we need to really treat this project as a legitimate project, was right around the time that Chris Bowman came in and got to kind of peek under the hood, and I think he vomited it a little in his mouth.
Yeah. Not a little, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, it was pretty easy to see that the project was, you know, a year or more older, because a lot of the concepts that were put in place for responsive design, such as device-specific breakpoints, mm-hmm. and things like that, and with the less structure, which was a little more popular a year ago than it is now. Mm-hmm. But I like to think that we are learning from our mistakes, and we are making a lot of improvements with moving modular with our SAS structure, and, you know, making integrating in Retina support, which totally wasn't in the project at all, and things like that.
It's definitely an interesting problem that we're running into, and kind of speaks to what Jared was talking about. You know, since the landscape is changing so rapidly, it really becomes almost a requirement to scale down your scope of your phase one launch to a point where, okay, let's just, you know, how quickly can we get this out the door? What's kind of our minimum viable product or, you know, whatever it might be? I think the Martha Stewart team says minimum lovable products, which I like.
Nice.
You know, and like, let's get that out the door and then, you know, assess from there and build out and kind of have a long, more of a long-term plan, but a short-term, you know, minimum lovable product to get out the door.
So if it took us a year and a half to do this project, right? And Drupal 8's coming out, you know, probably the beginning of next year. So we'll be sitting in this site for a while. But like, when do you think we'll start looking? And do you think that like that the next time that we'll have these lessons learned that we'll be able to like, you know, iterate and bang out? Because like, yeah, we start like similar thing actually has happened with Drupalize Me to a degree. I mean, we're a year on. We wanted to do the upgrade last year, and it's just been really hard to get the resources to focus. And so, you know, of course, you make decisions, and then it takes so long to implement that you're like, oh, well, I wish we had time to actually do this the way we would do it now, you know, and that kind of a thing. So, like, do you think that, like, what is our upgrade plan going forward, knowing that a new version of Drupal is coming out? And, like, does that affect our decision on when to do an upgrade or migrate or not? And then do you think that we'll be able to iterate faster next time?
Definitely, as far as the theme goes, yeah, we'll be able to iterate a lot more quickly, just because we've gone so modularly. And we, you know, with Twig coming out with Drupal 8, we can start writing, you know, or porting our current theme to Twig even before we're using Drupal 8. So theoretically, you know, once we move our actual content to Drupal 8, if we already have the Twig theme built beforehand, it should be pretty easy to match things up.
Yeah, and one thing we've been talking about, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that.
One thing we've been discussing as we kind of iterate on the site is starting to decouple more and more the site, more of the components of the site, so that we're not so tied to just shipping the whole thing in one fell swoop.
So that's the modular stuff you guys refer to.
Well, I'm not sure as far as the front end stuff. I think Carwin was referring more to the front end stuff.
The SaaS even just structure,
right.
Yeah. I see.
But even just, you know, let's get the commenting in the whole commenting system, for instance, let's get that into its own kind of service, and just continue to move more and more of things into kind of a service mentality that work together to provide, you know, what you see on the site. And so that Drupal is functioning as the content management system, and let's, you know, what the front end is,
yeah, the not a publishing system so much as a management system.
Exactly. And I think that once you get to that point, these upgrades won't be nearly as painful, because we could upgrade if we wanted to do a redesign. If the Drupal CMS is acting more as a service, the redesign can happen without even having to upgrade Drupal 7, you know, to Drupal 8. Anything like that. Or if we did want to upgrade to Drupal 8, we could upgrade that and leave the design as is, and not even notice a difference on the front end.
And you can also sort of take a phased approach. I'm a big fan of the idea of at least decoupling our blog, because I feel like as when we re-architected the site, one of the things that just became very clear, like one of the things we did was we identified all the key points of the site, like the primary URLs where people who are trying to discover Lullabot, like, what are we, what do we do, could we provide some value to you, kind of a thing. The blog is one place where we provide a lot of value to a lot of people, and it's sort of almost its own thing in terms of its audience, and at least from what we're finding. And then there are basically like sort of five other URLs of the site, like primary sort of top level URLs that speak to a completely different audience. And these are sort of people who are interested in hiring Lullabot or having Lullabot do something for them. And we identified key questions for the target audience for each of those URLs. And it almost feels like it's sort of its own site. It very much makes sense architecturally to sort of decouple that and be able to sort of manage our blog, which is, you know, articles, podcasts, news items, and those kinds of things, and be able to upgrade it on its own and tweak with it on its own and that kind of thing. So, cool. Yeah, I also think that there is a lot of buy-in, like, throughout all of Lullabot to the next time we do an upgrade or a redesign, we'd like to sort of save up for it and approach it like a real project and do something like the minimum lovable product approach. I don't think we'll have any trouble convincing the team to do that, as opposed to let's just kind of get started and do it in the margins over the next year and a half.
Yeah. I don't think that'll be a hard argument at all.
Right.
Cool. Well, we should probably wrap things up. Does anybody have any last, you know, parting thoughts on the new lovely lullabot.com?
We did it. Yes. And I liken it to like when James was talking about the, like, how everything's emerging and how that was sort of a pain point. I also look at it as, like, I feel like just generally what we do right now, we're a little bit like the first Apollo mission people. It's like, there is no such thing as the right or best way to go to the moon the first time. It was like, they just had to do this thing. And it's like, but to a degree, at least, it feels to me like we're doing something really cool, like going to the moon. And not that lullabot.com is that awesome, but just generally what we're doing right now in the web and in creating the web is so, like, emerging that it feels like we're creating all these best ways. So it's like, it's almost fun to, like, figure out through making mistakes, and because you look, because the how much you learn with each project feels radical compared to what it used to feel. So
yeah, we actually shipped a monkey with our first site.
Yes,
we were so scared about having it be a human.
Find the monkey.
Yes,
what do you got against monkeys?
Now we have to hide a monkey in our site somewhere, guys.
Somebody make a ticket.
I think Eric Duran actually hid a snowman in the code in one place too, which was kind of funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah, saw that.
Inspect source, everybody.
Yeah. Nice. Cool. Well, I think that's a good note to wrap up on. Thanks for coming on. I know we could probably talk about a lot more, and I'm sure that people are going to have questions where they want to dig into more details. So if you do have questions out there, please feel free to leave comments on the podcast, and we'll sort of keep an eye on that and answer questions as best we can. Obviously, we're not going to be able to go into great detail on lots of things, but we will try to answer what we can if you do have questions. And if you have thoughts for other podcasts that you would really like to hear, definitely get in touch with us. You can use the contact form on lullabot.com or on drupalize.me. You can also tweet DrupalizeMe, twitter.com/DrupalizeMe. And we also have a Facebook page, so you can get in touch with us there. And again, that's just facebook.com/DrupalizeMe. So yeah, talk to us. Let us know what you think. Let us know your questions, new topics. We are here to serve. And I think on our next podcast, we get to talk more front-endy stuff with a very special guest, which I'm Woo-hoo. Going to leave a secret for now. So, until next time, 2 weeks from today, happy Drupaling in Drupaland. Talk to you guys later. Thanks.